Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3, and it's now time for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares opened lower today, tracking losses in the US amid worries over tensions and conflict in the Middle East. Now, an early trade the Straits Times index was down 0.9% to 3,186 points after some 69 million securities changed hands in the broader market. As usual, closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen right now. The benchmark Straits Times index down 1.09% at 3,181 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 1.29 billion Sing dollars. The gainers trailed losers, 203 versus 401. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, Singtel, UOB, OCBC and Yangtze Xiang Shipbuilding Sing dollars. Heavily traded securities, Seatrium, Life Brands and Singtel. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have Elite Commercial REIT. The manager said today that the REIT will expand its investment strategy to include other asset sectors in the UK, in addition to its current focus on social infrastructure assets. Now, elsewhere, from Singapore's developers, sales jumping to the highest level in 4 months in March, to China's central bank keeping this a key policy rate unchanged. We've got more corporate and international headlines in focus. Also on deck, Apple's Tim Cook arrived in Vietnam, but really what's on his agenda. Now, joining me on the line is David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Mr. Kuo, welcome.
Hello, good afternoon, Tian. And hello, Elliot.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Right. Okay. Mr. Kuo, big day today for Singapore, but let's take a look at the stock market as usual. How did the SGFX so far today, given the wider geopolitical situation? I mean, we've seen what happened over the weekend in the Middle East. How far can that be contained?
I am not an armchair general, so I have no idea what goes on in the military arena, but things are not particularly good today. I think everything depends on what Israel plans to do now, and whether it plans to retaliate. Chances are it may do, but it depends how proportionate that retaliation will be, which is probably why, you know, people are a little bit scared. But having said that, the market hasn't done that badly yet. I mean, it was only down about sort of 30-odd points today. You would have thought that if there was a full-scale war going on, that the market would be a lot worse than that. But it was only down a bit today, down about 30 points. But I'll take 30 points down. Think of me as the Galanguri man, yeah? The guy who goes around collecting scraps from around the place. And today was a good buying opportunity for me. The market's down, and I'm there buying. So that's the way I look at a down market here, Jen.
Right, I see. Now let's zoom in on some of the companies to watch here in Singapore, Mr. Kuo. We've got Elite Commercial REIT, the manager, saying today that it will expand its investment strategy to look at other asset sectors in the UK in addition to its current focus on social infrastructure assets. I believe one of the areas highlighted is student accommodation. Doesn't seem to be new for REITs looking at UK, but how significant is this for Elite Commercial REIT where the money is concerned?
Very, very significant as far as Elite is concerned. If you have a look at the Elite portfolio, primarily it rents out its properties to the UK government. So the Department of Works and Pensions, primarily the job centres, is one of the areas that Elite is heavily concentrated on. And if you have a look at the UK budget, it doesn't look particularly good, does it? Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that some of these job centres may close, but I think as far as Elite is concerned, it needs to diversify. And moving into student accommodation is a popular area for a couple of Singapore companies already. So I think it's moving in the right direction. And when you talk about student accommodation in the UK, many of the students who rent the student accommodations do not relinquish them from 1 year to the next because they're terrified that if they move out of the student accommodation, they're not going to get something in the next term. So it's almost like 360 days worth of income as far as student accommodation landlords are concerned. So it's the right area for Elite to move into.
Right. While it is a step in the right direction, Mr. Goh, very quickly, do you think it has come too late for Elite Commercial REIT, especially looking at share price performance today as well?
Well, I don't think it is too late because I think there is huge demand for student accommodation. The space is getting crowded at the moment because there are a few Singapore companies that are already in that space. And I think if you have a look at the reports coming out from the UK, there is a shortage of student accommodation. So provided Elite finds the right areas in which it is going to be building and renting out these accommodations, it is a long-term play. So, yeah, I don't think today was really a good day to announce something like this. Had it not done so, with all the geopolitical tensions that we've been talking about, I think the share price would have gone up. But because today, if you have a look at all the REITs out there, many of the REITs were down at the bottom of the pecking order today. So not entirely surprising.
Right. Mr. Goh, let's take a look at Seatrium and Sabana REIT. Now, quite straightforward with Seatrium, saying that it will collaborate further with Shell on floating production systems. At Sabana REIT, that saga continues. It manages that it intends to convene the earlier requisitioned extraordinary general meeting on or before the 25th of May. Which one really stood out to you today?
Well, a bit of both, really. I mean, as far as Seatrium is concerned, I mean, it is a specialist in this floating arena, and I think tying up with Shell will be a good thing for it to do. As far as Sabana is concerned, they need to get this resolved, because until they do so, this cloud will be hanging over the managers of the REIT. So the sooner they get this sorted out, the better I think it will be for unit holders and also for the company so they can move forward. I'm not a legal expert, but I think the law courts have already sort of said what needs to be done, and I think they just need to hold the EGM and then just get it over and done with once and for all, and everybody can talk about something else.
Right. Now, let's stay in Singapore, Mr. Goh, because Singapore's developer sales jumped to the highest level in 4 months in March. I believe developers here in Singapore, they sold 718 private homes in March, more than quadrupling from the 149 units sold in February, according to data by the URA, of course. Your thoughts, how sustainable is this for local developers, though?
Well, I think it shows there is definitely demand for units, housing units here in Singapore. But what is missing from what you have just said is the price. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that there's a quadrupling of the number of units that were sold, but what was the price? I mean, were they heavily discounted in order for people to sort of pick up those units? If so, then maybe, you know, it adds a little bit more color into what is happening in the Singapore market. We know that property prices are very high in Singapore. We also know that there is going to be a slew of properties coming on stream. So maybe some of these property developers just think that the sooner they get rid of the properties, the better. And if they were offering a discount, then I'm not really surprised that Singapore investors or Singapore potential homeowners were out there sort of buying in force.
I see. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Now, Mr. Kuo, let's turn our attention to look at what's happening across the region. People's Bank of China, the PBOC, said it was leaving the rate on 100 billion yuan worth of one-year medium-term lending facility loans to some financial institutions at 2.5%. How far is this enough to bolster the country's economy as authorities try to walk this tightrope between spurring growth and maintaining that currency stability as well?
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's not a tightrope that I want to walk, and it is a very difficult situation that they have. I mean, on the one hand, they need to ensure that there is enough liquidity, enough money in the economy to spur economic growth and to give consumers some kind of confidence to go out and spend. Then, on the other hand, they have this problem with the falling renminbi, the falling yuan. And so they're trying to reduce the amount of liquidity. I mean, how are you going to be able to walk that tightrope? I have no idea. I think the better thing for it to do would be to, number one, get consumers more confident again, which means increasing the amount of liquidity in there, and then try and boost inflation a bit, because if there's no inflation in the system, people are going to say, as they have always done in the past, which is, if things are going to be cheaper tomorrow, why do I need to buy it today? And the moment you do that, then the economy will stall. And it is the same problem that, you know, many economies have. So I think what it really should do is to take a leaf out of Malaysia's book and just simply say, yeah, okay, if the Malaysian ringgit is down, so be it. But if the economy is growing, people will come back in and buy the Malaysian ringgit. And I think the same with China. It's trying to do two things, and the two things are diametrically opposite. It's a very difficult balancing act, and I'm glad they're on the tightrope and not me.
Now, further away, Mr. Koh, let's take a look at what's happening in the U.S., the earnings season underway. On Friday, we've got J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup and Wells Fargo reporting Q1 results. Earnings all up from Q4, driven by investment banking and trading revenue. But when we look at net interest income, all three of them posted lower net interest income, and I believe investors are worried about that. So how should we make sense of what's happening?
Well, I think the simplest way to look at it is, yeah, profits are up. And last week when I spoke with you, Ken, you asked me how I thought the bank results would be, and I said, yeah, you know, the bank's going to be making more profits. The only problem this time is that where are the profits coming from? It's definitely not coming from the net interest income, which is the difference between what they charge borrowers and what they pay savers. Because interest rates are going up in America, they have had to increase the savings rate. And that, of course, crimps the net interest income. But I think as far as banks are concerned, one thing we can take away is they're going to make money one way or another again here. And if they're not making money from the net interest income side, they're going to be making money from the non-net interest income. So it's the NNII this time, you know, that is driving the profits. And I think that will continue to drive the profits at the U.S. banks. So, put the net interest income to one side and then have a look at the non-net interest income, which is the fee that they're going to be charging customers, and see how they're going to be sort of faring next year.
So is it a case about earning on both sides, regardless where interest rate moves?
You know, they're going to make money one way or the other. I mean, I think the C in Citibank doesn't actually stand for charity, you know, and I think as far as OCBC, the two C's, they don't stand for charity either. Yeah, I mean, banks are there to make money. If they can't make money from their net interest income, they're going to be making money another way.
Right. And before we let you go, Mr. Koh, we always like to end on a fun note. And this time round, Apple's CEO, Tim Cook, he is in Hanoi as part of a two-day visit to Vietnam. And Vietnam, as we know, is a key manufacturing hub for Apple, for the iPhone maker. Now, state media said he is expected to meet students and content creators during the trip. And according to Vietnet, he will also meet users of Apple products to better understand how they are employed. Now, your thoughts, especially when we've got data coming in that Apple has lost the top phone maker spot to Samsung.
Yeah, I know. And as far as Apple is concerned, maybe it's pivoting slightly away from China now and then looking at other regional markets. And I think this trip by Tim Cook to Vietnam is not only about sort of learning what Vietnamese users of the iPhone, I mean, how they plan to use the iPhone, what they use the iPhone for. But I think he's also trying to connect with some of the suppliers and maybe manufacturers over in Vietnam. One interesting thing I noticed was that one of the first things he did when he got to Vietnam was to try this thing called the egg coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried egg coffee before. Have you, Tian Tian?
I have not. I heard it's nice.
Maybe we should make a date, Tian Tian. You and I can go out and try egg coffee. But bring Elliot along as well. Maybe he can sort of show us the finer points of how to consume egg coffee.
Right. Okay. Egg coffee, something to take away from this conversation as well, not forgetting what's happening with Apple too. Thanks a lot, Mr. Koh, for that. That was David Koh, co-founder of The Smart Investor. As always, thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.